One Man Revolution, episode 44. Everybody, here it is, episode 44 of the One Man Revolution, and I am the revolutionary. Today we're going to look at King George's speech from Fort Bragg on Tuesday the 28th, and at all the disinformation that is being portrayed as facts. His speech was approximately 28 minutes long, with a little bit of before and after. And I've already podcast a little bit on the scorecard of how many times King George said things like September 11th, Osama bin Laden, and other things, about his mission and whatnot. So today we're going to listen a little bit of, basically to King George's speech. And I'm going to, every time there's an issue where there is some factual discrepancies where I feel the disinformation is being portrayed instead of the actual facts. Well, today I spoke to an individual by phone up in the great state of Maine, and he told me that sometimes the facts can be interpreted to be true for either side. And all I have to say to you is, my friend, you are also a revolutionary, because when you look at the facts are supposed to be cold pieces of information. But the way our current media system portrays most fact, and I put fact in quotes, is that they are not necessarily the truth. They could be someone's interpretation of what the truth is. So I thank you for that, my revolutionary friend from Maine. So without any further ado, let's jump right into the podcast and listen to King George's speech from Fort Bragg.
Good evening. I'm pleased to visit Fort Bragg, home of the Airborne and Special Operations Forces. It's an honor to speak before you tonight. My greatest responsibility as president is to protect the American people. And that's your calling as well. I thank you for your service, your courage, and your sacrifice. I thank your families who support you in your vital work. The soldiers and families of Fort Bragg have contributed mightily to our efforts to secure our country and promote peace. America is grateful, and so is your Commander-in-Chief. The troops here and across the world are fighting a global war on terror. The war reached our shores on September the 11th, 2001.
Okay, here's the first thing that I have an issue with. He says that the war reached our shores on September 11th, 2001. We know that that was the time at which two aircraft crashed into the World Trade Centers, and then subsequently the World Trade Centers fell. Also, a plane went down supposedly into the Pentagon. There is no evidence really of that. I've seen some interesting conspiracy theory that it was a missile that then basically was covered up, because an aircraft does not vaporize into nothingness, as was shown in the Pentagon. And the plane that went down in Pennsylvania, the one that was brought down that had hijackers on it, and the crew and several passengers took that plane down. All right, so that's what he's talking about as being a war that has reached our shores. Well, the facts in this case, according to CNN, the McClear News Hour, and the Program on International Policy Attitudes, is that the 9/11 Commission concluded that there was no collaborative relationship between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, that there was no credible evidence that Iraq and al-Qaeda cooperated on the attacks to the United States. And by invoking 9/11, King George is exploiting the public's confusion about Iraq's involvement in 9/11. And in an October poll that was done prior to the re-election of President Bush, I found that 75% of Bush supporters believed that Iraq was providing substantial support to al-Qaeda. Now, that's the bipartisan 9/11 Commission and polls showing that basically, you know, there is no connection between the two. All right, that there was no evidence of a collaborative relationship. There was no evidence that there was cooperation between Iraq and the al-Qaeda cooperative attacks. There was no cooperation. So there's our first factual discrepancy or disinformation from King George. Back to you, O King of ours.
The terrorists who attack us and the terrorists we face murder in the name of a totalitarian ideology that hates freedom, rejects tolerance, and despises all dissent. Their aim is to remake the Middle East in their own grim image of tyranny and oppression by toppling governments, by driving us out of the region.
Now, my question is, what other governments have been toppled by terrorism in that region? Any of you revolutionaries out there, if you could send me information on other countries in the area that have been toppled by terrorist activity, where the terrorists replaced a current sitting government and removed them from power, I would like to see evidence of that. According to the evidence that I can gather, I have not seen other foreign governments. And of course, my resources are much more limited than some of you folks. Maybe you work within an organization that has contact. And I'm not saying I'm not going to give any names. I'm not going to give any, I'm not going to give up any information. But, you know, to a source, because I am part of the media here. But I would like to know what these other countries that are being overthrown are. He does make mention of a few, but I don't see a causal connection between the terrorists seizing the power after destroying and creating these terrorist plots.
And by exporting terror. To achieve these aims, they have continued to kill in Madrid, Istanbul, Jakarta, Casablanca, Riyadh, Bali, and elsewhere. The terrorists believe that free societies are essentially corrupt and decadent.
Again, I'd like to see proof of that. You know, I mean, yes, there were some documents and there was information that says that Osama bin Laden and his followers agree that because we do not follow the teachings of the Quran, because we are not following the teachings and the extremist teachings that they themselves agree with, that we are decadent. But that's because of the lifestyle that we're leading, not necessarily because of the country we are from. They're against all people that are decadent. And, you know, we have to place ourselves within that and agree, yes, we are decadent. Just look at our children.
And with a few hard blows, they can force us to retreat.
Okay, how can with a few hard blows, they can force us to retreat? That he thinks that all that these terrorists are going to do is a couple of hard blows and we're going to retreat. Again, love to hear where he gets this information from.
They are mistaken. After September the 11th, I made a commitment to the American people. This nation will not wait to be attacked again. We will defend our freedom. We will take the fight to the enemy.
All right, and again, no causal link, no cooperative link, no corroborating evidence to show that there was a link between Saddam Hussein and the terrorists that were on the 9/11 aircraft. Now, I've said this before, 24 people, 19 were Saudi Arabians, the others were made up of a mixture, none of them were from Iraq, from what I can ascertain, and none of them, maybe they traveled through Iraq to get to somewhere, but they were not trained in Iraq, they were not brought in from Iraq, they were not Iraqis, they were mostly Saudis, but yet we go in and attack Iraq.
Iraq is the latest battlefield in this war.
Okay, now, this war. Before the war, Bush said the rationale for the Iraqi war was preventing it from becoming a terrorist training ground. Well, there was, he said in a November 4th, 2002 speech that imagine a terrorist network with Iraq as an arsenal and as a training ground so that Saddam Hussein could use his shadowy group of people to attack his enemy and leave no fingerprint behind. Well, a CIA report, and this is our own Central Intelligence Agency, says that Iraq is now becoming a prime location for training for Al-Qaeda militants. And it's better than Afghanistan, because Afghanistan's current government is no longer being as supportive to terrorism as they once were, mostly because we bombed them back to the Stone Age. A new classified assessment by the CIA says Iraq may prove to be an even more effective training ground for Islamic extremists than Afghanistan was in Al-Qaeda's early days, because it's serving as a real-world laboratory for urban combat. Okay, so think about that. Our own CIA is saying that because we unseated Saddam Hussein, a totalitarian dictator, that now the training ground is right here where we are fighting an urban some urban combat. So we are creating bigger problems by being there.
Many terrorists who kill innocent men, women, and children on the streets of Baghdad are followers of the same murderous ideology that took the lives of our citizens in New York.
Now, is he saying that the murderous ideology is being a Muslim?
Washington and Pennsylvania. There is only one course of action against them: to defeat them abroad before they attack us at home.
Now, again, the president gets briefed on a daily basis of plans and things that are in the work on the terrorist grapevine that are plans of attack against various targets and their likelihood. Now, since we are not privy to those as individuals, and the president made it very clear in a speech a couple of years back that he would not want to make all of his records available because then his people wouldn't feel that they could speak the truth to him, because they would be accountable for what they say. So basically we have to take him on his word that he knows something we don't know, and I doubt it. But he's saying that they're going to attack. They're going to attack again. They're going to come in. He's bringing up all of this terrorism that may or may not exist. Isn't that terrorism in itself? Promoting the fear of something to remain in a strong position of power? Bringing up the fear of something so that you or your cronies can profit from something?
The commander in charge of coalition operations in Iraq, who is also senior commander at this base, General John Vines, put it well the other day. He said, "We either deal with terrorism and this extremism abroad, or we deal with it when it comes to us." Our mission in Iraq is clear.
Now, on the 22nd of June, I made about a 35, 40-minute long podcast about whether or not our mission is clear. And Bush has changed, good old King George has changed his opinion on that about 9 times.
We're hunting down the terrorists. We're helping Iraqis build a free nation that is an ally in the war on terror. We're advancing freedom in the broader Middle East. We are removing a source of violence and instability and laying the foundation of peace for our children and our grandchildren.
It's always for the children, isn't it? Whenever you get in trouble in politics, you just say it's for the children, and people tend to say, oh, well, they're forward-thinking. And what it basically is saying that, well, we're not leaving for a very long time, so it's going to be your children's problem.
The work in Iraq is difficult, and it is dangerous. Like most Americans, I see the images of violence and bloodshed.
That you created by putting our people in the line of fire.
Every picture is horrifying, and the suffering is real.
Makes you kind of sick, doesn't it, old King George?
Amid all this violence, I know Americans ask the question, is the sacrifice worth it? It is worth it.
I disagree.
And it is vital to the future security of our country.
Says you.
And tonight, I will explain the reasons why.
Well, you'll explain the reasons that you say are why, but then 2 weeks from now, you're going to turn around and say some other reasons of why.
Some of the violence you see in Iraq is being carried out by ruthless killers who are converging on Iraq to fight the advance of peace and freedom. Our military reports that we've killed or captured hundreds of foreign fighters in Iraq.
Hundreds. Did you hear that? We've captured or killed hundreds, not thousands, not tens of thousands, hundreds.
Who've come from Saudi Arabia.
Oh, wait, Saudis? But wait, I thought they were our friends. We never attacked them after September 11th when the majority of the people on those flights were Saudi Arabian.
In Syria, Iran, Egypt, Sudan.
Oh, and we'll talk about the whole Iran thing a little bit later. No, the president-elect was not one of the hostage takers. I know that a lot of people are saying that. I've seen the photographs. I've seen all of the information. I've seen and heard some FBI individuals looking at these pictures and CIA people. And from all the rumblings in the Revolution Network that's out there, it doesn't look like it's the same guy. Half the hostages say, yeah, that could be the guy. The other half say, yeah, I don't think it's the guy. So we'll talk about that another time.
Yemen, Libya, and others. They are making common cause with criminal elements, Iraqi insurgents, and remnants of Saddam Hussein's regime who want to restore the old order.
See, and again, he's using that whole idea that, you know, the old order, well, wait a second, it was orderly before we came in there and generated chaos.
They fight because they know that the survival of their hateful ideology is at stake.
Again, which ideology are we talking about here? A hateful ideology against Americans that are standing on their soil? Made mention of this before. Even if the Canadians came down here with guns, we'd repel them. And we like Canadians.
They know that as freedom takes root in Iraq, it will inspire millions across the Middle East to claim their liberty as well. And when the Middle East grows in democracy and prosperity and hope.
And how's that going to happen? You know, prosperity, hope. These people are completely hopeless right now. They're dependent on their foreign oppressors, if you look at it that way, for their own protection. And they're being permitted to explore this democracy. And you'll see from some of the numbers I'm going to give you later that pretty much 60% of the people don't give a shit.
The terrorists will lose their sponsors, lose their recruits, and lose their hopes for turning that region into a base for attacks on America and our allies.
Well, I already made mention that he said that it's been said by the CIA that that's not true, that we're already turning it into a nice training ground because of the urban warfare that's going on
around the world. Some wonder whether Iraq is a central front in the war on terror. Among the terrorists, there is no debate. Hear the words of Osama bin Laden.
Well, there's a guy we haven't heard him talking about in a long time. I thought it was all Saddam's fault.
This Third World War is raging in Iraq. The whole world is watching this war.
Oh, listen very carefully to what he says, because it's hilarious the way he says what Osama bin Laden says. It's basically, just listen.
He says it will end in victory and glory, or misery and humiliation.
well, isn't that the way it can go? It's either going to be in victory and glory or misery and humiliation. There's really no middle ground when you're fighting a war, right? It's either you win or you lose. Duh.
The terrorists know that the outcome will leave them emboldened or defeated.
Again, either you're a winner or you're a loser. You know, I don't know why his speechwriters even put this in there. It's insulting to think that we are this stupid.
So they're waging a campaign of murder and destruction.
And how does that reach the goal of either winning or losing? See, there's no connection. I'd love to meet his speechwriters. Actually, I'd like to fire his speechwriters. Well, no, actually, I like leaving his speechwriters right where they are.
And there is no limit to the innocent lives they are willing to take.
Well, and they wouldn't be getting taken if we wouldn't have put civilians and military in the line of fire. And didn't you do that, King George?
We see the nature of the enemy in terrorists who exploded car bombs along a busy shopping street in Baghdad, including one outside a mosque. We see the nature of the enemy in terrorists who sent a suicide bomber to a teaching hospital in Mosul. We see the nature of the enemy in terrorists who behead civilian hostages and broadcast their atrocities for the world to see. These are savage acts of violence, but they have not brought the terrorists any closer to achieving their strategic objectives.
And what were those strategic objectives? Either to win or to lose. You know, he hasn't mentioned what their exact strategic objectives are. But hey, you know, I'm just a layman over here listening to the actual words that he's speaking.
The terrorists, both foreign and Iraqi, failed to stop the transfer of sovereignty. They failed to break our coalition and force a mass withdrawal by our allies. They failed to incite an Iraqi civil war. They failed to prevent free elections. They failed to stop the formation of a democratic Iraqi government that represents all of Iraq's diverse population. And they failed to stop Iraqis from signing up in large number with the police forces and the army to defend their new democracy. The lesson of this experience is clear. The terrorists can kill the innocent, but they cannot stop the advance of freedom.
Uh-huh.
The only way our enemies can succeed is if we forget the lessons of September the 11th.
Again, he's using September 11th to say that this is why we're here. That we are there because we are trying to stop the terrorists that weren't there in the first place.
If we abandon the Iraqi people to men like Zarqawi, and if we yield the future of the Middle East to men like bin Laden, for the sake of our nation's security, this will not happen on my watch.
Damn, I wish there was an election sometime real soon.
A little over a year ago, I spoke to the nation and described our coalition's goals in Iraq. I said that America's mission in Iraq is to defeat an enemy and give strength to a friend, a free, representative government that is an ally in the war on terror and a beacon of hope in a part of the world that is desperate for reform.
Desperate for reform from what? They were the only country that was even close to being... You know what? This is just ridiculous.
I outlined the steps we would take to achieve this goal. We would hand authority over to a sovereign Iraqi government. We would help Iraqis hold free elections by January 2005. We would continue helping Iraqis rebuild their nation's infrastructure and economy. We would encourage more international support for Iraq's democratic transition. And we would enable Iraqis to take increasing responsibility for their own security and stability. In the past year, we have made significant progress.
Okay, in the past year, we have made significant progress. Talk about a whole load of crap. Daily attacks are on the rise. The number of attacks per day has risen from 10 per day in May of 2003 to 52 a day in June 2004 to 70 in May of 2005 a day. Let that sink in for a little bit. Also, car bombings are on the rise. There have been more than 484 car bombs since the handover, and that killed at least 2,221 people and wounded at least 5,574, according to AP. And even General John Abizad said the insurgency is just as strong as it was 6 months ago. In terms of a comparison to 6 months ago, in terms of foreign fighters, I believe that more foreign fighters are coming to Iraq than were here 6 months ago. In terms of overall strength of the insurgency, he would say it's the same as it was. Even Donald Rumsfeld said that the insurgency could go on for up to 12 years. And he said this on the 26th, 2 days prior to the president speaking to from Fort Bragg to the nation. And he said this on Fox. He said that insurgency could go on for any number of years. Insurgencies tend to go on 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 years. All right, so I don't think we're making any significant progress. I think that just from those four examples, it's getting worse.
1 year ago today, we restored sovereignty to the Iraqi people. In January 2005, more than 8 million Iraqi men and women voted in elections that were free and fair and took place on time.
Boy, can't even read. The White House even says that they resisted the idea of holding elections in January and only succumbed to the pressure from Iraq's most powerful cleric, the Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani. The Iraqi expert Juan Cole charges it was Sistani who demanded one person, one vote elections. We wanted a republic. Or we wanted to have elected representatives then choose the government. But what Sistani said is he wanted one man, one vote. And the extent of that victory, to the extent that it's a victory for Iraqis, Americans were maneuvered into having to go along with it. All right, so we were not, and that's that quote I was looking for before, saying that we were not really looking to spread democracy. We were looking to spread an oligarchy or a republic.
We continued our efforts to help them rebuild their country. Rebuilding a country after 3 decades of tyranny is hard.
Oh, and, bombing it beyond all total recognition, where we basically blew up every single telephone junction, every bridge, every military target that we possibly could, and continued to do that long after we had, quote unquote, gotten rid of Saddam Hussein. We continued to destroy targets of opportunity.
And rebuilding while at war is even harder.
And Halliburton got those contracts. A lot of those contracts were given to Dick Cheney's old company.
Our progress has been uneven, but progress is being made. We're improving roads and schools.
That we blew up.
And health clinics.
That we blew up.
We're working to improve basic services like sanitation, electricity, and
that we blew up. We also blew up the water treatment facilities because those, if you get rid of the water in a desert, people will stop fighting.
Water. And together with our allies, we will help the new Iraqi government deliver a better life for its citizens. In the past year, the international community has stepped forward with vital assistance.
Yeah, because we've tried to shame them into doing it. Hell, who's left in our quote-unquote coalition of the enlightened?
Some 30 nations have troops in Iraq, and many others are contributing non-military assistance.
Yeah, like, I don't know, Red Cross, Red Crescent, all of the other humanitarian aid organizations from around the world trying to keep these people from dying because we destroyed their country.
The United Nations is in Iraq to help Iraqis write a constitution and conduct their next elections. Thus far, some 40 countries and three international organizations have pledged about $34 billion in assistance for Iraqi reconstruction.
Yeah, okay, wait a minute. 40 countries have given $30 billion, and we have given $280 billion so far. Do you see the problem here? He's trying to say, well, all these countries have come to our assistance and they're giving the money to the Iraqi people. They're not helping us out. We caused this problem and we threw $280 billion down this hole so far.
More than 80 countries and international organizations recently came together in Brussels to coordinate their efforts to help Iraqis provide for their security and rebuild their country. And next month, donor countries will meet in Jordan to support Iraqi reconstruction.
Well, Brussels, Jordan, you guys are getting closer. Why don't you guys go to Iraq and actually see how it is?
Whatever our differences in the past, the world understands that success in Iraq is critical to the security of our nations.
Of course, because without security in Iraq, we can't build the pipeline and get the oil flowing again.
As German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder said at the White House yesterday, there can be no question a stable and democratic Iraq is in the vested interest of not just Germany, but also Europe. Finally, we have continued our efforts to equip and train Iraqi security forces. We've made gains in both the number and quality of those forces. Today, Iraq has more than 160,000 security forces trained and equipped for a variety of missions.
Huh? Well, according to the Brookings Institution, as of May 2005, there were 50,000 troops that were what they would consider proficient and well-equipped. And according to the New York Times, on June 13th, that only three battalions are rated fully operational by the Americans. And many others are far behind in terms of training, manpower, excuse me, and equipment. And most Iraqi security forces are not trained or equipped. So what do you have to say to that?
Iraqi forces have fought bravely, helping to capture terrorists and insurgents in Najaf and Samarra, Fallujah, and Mosul. And in the past month, Iraqi forces have led a major anti-terrorist campaign in Baghdad called Operation Lightning, which has led to the capture of hundreds of suspected insurgents.
Suspected?
Like free people everywhere, Iraqis want to be defended by their own countrymen, and we're helping Iraqis assume those duties. The progress in the past year has been significant.
Again, I've pointed that out. It has not been significant.
And we have a clear path forward.
What, legislators, clear is the mission statements that you have made so far? Our mission is to do this. Our mission is to get WMDs. Our mission is to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Our mission is to blah, 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 blah. How the hell did you become president? Oh, yeah, that's right. Your daddy had powerful friends.
To complete the mission, we will continue to hunt down the terrorists and insurgents. To complete the mission, we will prevent Al-Qaeda and other foreign terrorists from turning Iraq into what Afghanistan was under the Taliban.
And that's exactly what the CIA says is happening.
A safe haven from which they could launch attacks on America and our friends. And the best way to complete the mission is to help Iraqis build a free nation that can govern itself, sustain itself, and defend itself. So our strategy going forward has both a military track and a political track.
Yeah, a political track to keep all of your friends in office until the end of your term. You know, I don't know how Rumsfeld still has a job. I don't know how our good friend Sensenbrenner has a job. I mean, all these guys just need to go.
The principal task of our military is to find and defeat the terrorists. And that is why we are on the offense. And as we pursue the terrorists, our military is helping to train Iraqi security forces so that they can defend their people and fight the enemy on their own. Our strategy can be summed up this way. As the Iraqis stand up, we will stand down. We've made progress.
No. You haven't.
But we have a lot more work to do.
You can say that again.
Today, Iraqi security forces are at different levels of readiness. Some are capable of taking on the terrorists and insurgents by themselves. A large number can plan and execute anti-terrorist operations with coalition support. The rest are forming and not yet ready to participate fully in security operations.
But yet he counts them all as that 160,000 person security force.
Our task is to make the Iraqi units fully capable and independent. We're building up Iraqi security forces as quickly as possible so they can assume the lead in defeating the terrorists and insurgents. Our coalition is devoting considerable resources and manpower to this critical task. Thousands of coalition troops are involved in the training and equipping of Iraqi security forces. NATO is establishing a military academy near Baghdad to train the next generation of Iraqi military leaders. And 17 nations are contributing troops to the NATO training mission. Iraqi army and police are being trained by personnel from Italy, Germany, Ukraine, Turkey, Poland, Romania, Australia, and the United Kingdom.
And notice all that training, he didn't mention the United States of America.
Today, dozens of nations are working toward a common objective, an Iraq that can defend itself, defeat its enemies, and secure its freedom. To further prepare Iraqi forces to fight the enemy on their own, we are taking three new steps. First, we are partnering coalition units with Iraqi units. These coalition Iraqi teams are conducting operations together in the field. These combined operations are giving Iraqis a chance to experience how the most professional armed forces in the world operate in combat.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Second, we are embedding coalition training.
Yeah, so that first one, that they're going out on missions and doing that stuff. Can you imagine if there were some, I don't know, insurgents in the ranks learning all of this great stuff? That there are people that are just sitting in these training sessions going, oh, this is how the Americans and the coalition forces think. So I guess I will take this back and share it with my brothers in the Al-Qaeda.
Transition teams inside Iraqi units. These teams are made up of coalition officers and non-commissioned officers who live, work, and fight together with their Iraqi comrades. Under U.S. command, they are providing battlefield advice and assistance to Iraqi forces during combat operations. Between battles, they are assisting the Iraqis with important skills such as urban combat and intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance techniques.
So we're basically teaching the people that could, again, become insurgents, that could become individuals. We're teaching the people in this area exactly what our tactics are. Now, hey, I don't have a problem if these people stay loyal to us, but why should they? We attack them.
Third, we're working with the Iraqi ministries of Interior and Defense to improve their capabilities to coordinate anti-terrorist operations. We're helping them develop command and control structures. We're also providing them with civilian and military leadership training so Iraq's new leaders can effectively manage their forces in the fight against terror. The new Iraqi security forces are proving their courage every day.
You are listening to One Man Revolution with your host, The Revolutionary.
More than 2,000 members of Iraqi security forces have given their lives in the line of duty.
More than 2,000. Did you guys see the statistics that I threw up the other day? We're at about 1,900. So they've lost more than we have.
Thousands more have stepped forward and are now training to serve their nation. With each engagement, Iraqi soldiers grow more battle-hardened and their officers grow more experienced. We've learned that Iraqis are courageous and that they need additional skills. And that is why a major part of our mission is to train them so they can do the fighting, and then our troops can come home. I recognize that Americans want our troops to come home as quickly as possible.
Well, I would have preferred that they never went in the first place, but, you know, you would call me a peacenik commie pinko or something.
So do I. Some contend that we should set a deadline for withdrawing U.S. forces. Let me explain why that would be a serious mistake. Setting an artificial timetable would send the wrong message to the Iraqis, who need to know that America will not leave before the job is done. It would send the wrong signal to our troops, who need to know that we are serious about completing the mission they are risking their lives to achieve.
Now, back in 1999, back in June of 1999, according to the Seattle Post, then Governor Bush, who was running for president, said about President Clinton, "I think it's also important for the president to lay out a timetable as to how long they will be involved and when they will be withdrawn." And he was talking about our involvement in some of the Balkan conflicts. Like Bosnia and Herzegovina.
It would send the wrong message to the enemy, who would know that all they have to do is wait us out.
Well, isn't that always what the enemy has to do anyway? I mean, if you really wanted to be a terrorist, I would take an entire cell. I would emigrate to another country, somewhere else. And I love when the media does this, too. That's why I'm laughing to myself right now. I'm telling the terrorists exactly what to do. So you know what? As a revolutionary, I'm going to shut my damn mouth.
We will stay in Iraq as long as we are needed, and not a day longer. Some Americans ask me if completing the mission is so important, why don't you send more troops? If our commanders on the ground say we need more troops, I will send them. But our commanders tell me they have the number of troops they need to do their job.
Another inaccuracy. According to the London-based think tank, the International Institute for Strategic Studies, the insurgency in Iraq is gaining strength from the lawlessness of Western Iraq. Military, it's security vacuum, you know, because militarily it's a security vacuum. The main reason the U.S. officers have said that they are unable to gain control of the West, it's because they don't have enough troops. And that's according to Major Mark Lister, a senior Marine Air officer in the Anbar province. But he put it basically, we've got all the toys, but not enough boys. And President Bush has insisted that he sent enough troops to Iraq that the U.S. military officers in the western Al-Anbar province say that they repeatedly asked for more troops, but their commanders in Baghdad and the Pentagon have denied their requests. All right, so, you know, maybe that's, you know, just a load of malarkey, but, I mean, it's out there, and it's by an independent group and someone that's not even within the United States.
Sending more Americans would undermine our strategy of encouraging Iraqis to take the lead in this fight. And sending more Americans would suggest that we intend to stay forever.
Well, maybe not forever, maybe 10, 8, 10, 12 years.
When we are in fact working for the day when Iraq can defend itself and we can leave. As we determine the right force level, our troops can know that I will continue to be guided by the advice that matters, the sober judgment of our military leaders. The other critical element of our strategy is to help ensure that the hopes Iraqis expressed at the polls in January are translated into a secure democracy. The Iraqi people are emerging from decades of tyranny and oppression. Under the regime of Saddam Hussein, the Shia and Kurds were brutally oppressed.
And they still make up 15 to 20% of the population.
And the vast majority of Sunni Arabs were also denied their basic rights, while senior regime officials enjoyed the privileges of unchecked power.
Oh, you mean like you guys?
The challenge facing Iraqis today is to put this past behind them and come together to build a new Iraq that includes all of its people. They're doing that by building the institutions of a free society, a society based on freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, and equal justice under law.
Sounds like the Bill of Rights. Why don't we just give them our Constitution? We aren't using it right now. Thanks, Kingy.
The Iraqis have held free elections and established a transitional national assembly. The next step is to write a good constitution that enshrines these freedoms in permanent law.
Sure, but just like you, they could just ignore the law and pass things like the Patriot Act.
The assembly plans to expand its constitutional drafting committee to include more Sunni Arabs. Many Sunnis who opposed the January elections are now taking part in the democratic process.
Yeah, because they know if they don't do it now, they're going to be eliminated forever.
And that is essential to Iraq's future. After a constitution is written, the Iraqi people will have a chance to vote on it. If approved, Iraqis will go to the polls again to elect a new government under their new permanent constitution. By taking these critical steps and meeting their deadlines, Iraqis will bind their multi-ethnic society together in a democracy that respects the will of the majority and protects minority rights. As Iraqis grow...
Well, that's not exactly what a democracy means, but I guess in your world, that's what it is.
...grow confident that the democratic progress they're making is real and permanent. More will join the political process. And as Iraqis see that their military can protect them, more will step forward with vital intelligence to help defeat the enemies of a free Iraq. The combination of political and military reform will lay a solid foundation for a free and stable Iraq. As Iraqis make progress toward a free society, the effects are being felt beyond Iraq's borders. Before our coalition liberated Iraq, Libya was secretly pursuing nuclear weapons.
And it's always nice when he says someone was secretly doing something, because if it's secret, doesn't that mean that nobody's supposed to know?
Today, the leader of Libya has given up his chemical and nuclear weapon programs. Across the broader Middle East, people are claiming their freedom. In the last few months, we've witnessed elections in the Palestinian territories in Lebanon. These elections are inspiring democratic reformers in places like Egypt and Saudi Arabia.
Where there's a royal family who, I seem to remember, they support you.
Our strategy to defend ourselves and spread freedom is working.
Nah, not necessarily. The Palestinian elections have been getting worked on for decades. Same thing with the terrorists. You know, the idea behind Libya is they didn't want us to attack them. And basically, if you want to be a big bully and say it's all you, hey, it's all you, King George.
The rise of freedom in this vital region will eliminate the conditions that feed radicalism.
Or spark it up even more, saying that they don't want to lose what they have.
Ideologies of murder and make our nation safer. We have more work to do, and there will be tough moments that test America's resolve. We're fighting against men with blind hatred and armed with lethal weapons who are capable of any atrocity. They wear no uniform. They respect no laws of warfare or morality.
A law of warfare. You don't attack someone who has no capability or possibility to defend themselves. Wouldn't that have been us sending in the entire United States military to eliminate Saddam Hussein? Just a question.
They take innocent lives to create chaos for the cameras.
Like knocking out all the power and water and telephone, for an extended period of time. And then coming in as the savior.
They are trying to shake our will in Iraq, just as they tried to shake our will on September the 11th, 2001.
And he invokes the royal 2001 September 11th.
They will fail. The terrorists do not understand America. The American people do not falter under threat. And we will not allow our future to be determined by car bombers and assassins. America and our friends are in a conflict that demands much of us. It demands the courage of our fighting men and women. It demands the steadfastness of our allies, and it demands the perseverance of our citizens. We accept these burdens because we know what is at stake. We fight today because Iraq now carries the hope of freedom in a vital region of the world. And the rise of democracy will be the ultimate triumph over radicalism and terror. And we fight today because terrorists want to attack our country and kill our citizens. And Iraq is where they're making their stand.
We will fight them on the beaches. We will fight them in the air. We shall fight them with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever it may cost may be. We shall fight them on the land grounds. We shall fight them in the fields and in the streets.
You know, if you're going to rip off Churchill, at least rip him off correctly.
So we'll fight them there. We'll fight them across the world. And we will stay in the fight until the fight is won.
Closer, it would have been, we shall never surrender, and even if I do not, will not for a moment believe that this island or a large part would be subjugated and starving, then our empire beyond the seas, armed with the guard and guarded by the British fleet, would carry on the struggle until... in God's good time, the new world, by the way, that was us, with its power and might steps forward to rescue and to the rescue and liberation of the old. Dude, again, if you're going to rip off Churchill, at least rip him off right.
America has done difficult work before. From our desperate fight for independence to the darkest days of a civil war, to the hard-fought battles against tyranny in the 20th century, there were many chances to lose our heart, our nerve, or our way. But Americans have always held firm because we have always believed in certain truths. We know that if evil is not confronted, it gains in strength and audacity and returns to strike us again. We know that when the work is hard, the proper response is not retreat, it is courage. And we know that this great ideal of human freedom entrusted to us in a special way, and that the ideal of liberty is worth defending. In this time of testing, our troops can know the American people are behind you. Next week, our nation has an opportunity to make sure that support is felt by every soldier, sailor, airman, Coast Guardsman, and Marine at every outpost across the world. This 4th of July, I ask you to find a way to thank the men and women defending our freedom by flying the flag, sending letter to our troops in the field, or helping the military family down the street. The Department of Defense has set up a website, americasupportsyou.mil.
Our partners, it's a .mil, dude. It must be somebody with, I guess maybe you hired an outsource?
You can go there to learn about private efforts in your own community. At this time when we celebrate our freedom, let us stand with the men and women who defend us all. To the soldiers in this hall and our servicemen and women across the globe, I thank you for your courage under fire and your service to our nation. I thank our military families. The burden of war falls especially hard on you. In this war, we have lost good men and women who left our shores to defend freedom and did not live to make the journey home. I've met with families grieving the loss of loved ones.
That you sent to die. Remember, you do not have clean hands on this one, King George. You sent them directly in because you made a decision based on, you know, your own core of cronies that you have around you. Your advisors wanted this war prior to you even getting elected.
Who were taken from us too soon. I've been inspired by their strength in the face of such great loss.
Well, of course, they also have to sign a document saying that they, follow the Republican Party, wouldn't say anything bad against you. So, of course, you're going to be, and you probably don't even realize that because, you know, your front group comes out and filters all these people first.
We pray for the families. And the best way to honor the lives that have been given in this struggle is to complete the mission.
Yeah, and which mission was that again? Go back and listen to my June 22nd podcast that says, On a Mission.
I thank those of you who have re-enlisted in an hour when your country needs you.
Because we can't get anybody else to enlist because, well, we're at war and people really were only joining to go to college.
And to those watching tonight who are considering a military career.
You're nuts.
There is no higher calling than service in our armed forces.
Man, talk about a desperate plea at this point. The desperate plea of the President of the United States saying, run on down to your local recruiting office, you people who are thinking of a career in the military. You've had a month off of after high school to think about what you're going to do. Are you going to go to college? Are you going to get a job? You know, a lot of people who, are unsure used to join the military because it was a great holding ground until you could, go ahead and enter college. Well, now, because we're at war, and they need just troops on the ground, they need infantry, so that's where you'd be going. That's why they're having such problems, and this is a desperate plea.
We live in freedom because every generation has produced patriots willing to serve a cause greater than themselves.
And I would serve any cause that was within the Constitution and to defend this great nation. And don't sit there and say, Mr. I was in college at Yale and I joined the Texas National Guard to defend this great nation during Vietnam, you friggin' chicken hawk. Don't sit there and say that you were one of these people.
Those who serve today are taking their rightful place among the greatest generations that have worn our nation's uniform.
It's like he's saying that they're going to the Second World War, which is not what this is. This is not even a declared war. This is a mission and action.
When the history of this period is written,
they're going to call you a complete asshole.
The liberation of Afghanistan and the liberation of Iraq will be remembered as great turning points in the story of freedom. After September the 11th, 2001,
invoke the holy September 11th again.
I told the American people that the road ahead would be difficult.
No, you didn't. You said it would be a cakewalk. 6 days, six weeks. You doubt it would be 6 months.
And that we would prevail.
Eventually.
Well, it has been difficult.
No kidding.
And we are prevailing.
Not really.
Our enemies are brutal, but they are no match for the United States of America.
You mean our military, which is one of the best in the world. I agree with you on that. Although, I don't see you in a flak jacket going to Iraq and seeing what's really going on.
And they are no match for the men and women of the United States military.
Of course, he's in a military base, and he's closing it up with this. Of course, there's going to be a rousing amount of applause. Ready? Set?
May God bless you all.
Listening to One Man Revolution with your host, the Revolutionary.
All right, in summary, what are we going to say? All right, George Bush or no Churchill, whoever your speechwriter is, get him to at least copy it down right. Iraq is definitely and seriously having problems. And from one man's point of view, we need to get out of there. I support our troops. I hope everybody has a pleasant and happy 4th of July here in the United States. And for those of you across the seas in the country of Great Britain, you know, down with the British, up with the colonies, and you know, we've come a long way, and we're really sorry that we are still following in the footsteps of imperialism. I thought we had outgrown that a long time ago. All right, so I am the Revolutionary, and you're listening to One Man Revolution. And if you'd like to contact the One Man Revolution, all you have to do is write us an email to onemanrevolution@gmail.com or visit the website at onemanrevolution.org or go to iTunes. Go into the podcast directory and look up One Man Revolution. Once you're there, go ahead and click subscribe. Over the course of the past 48 hours, our listenership has more than doubled, and our traffic has quadrupled just from the outset of one podcasting directory. I find that quite amazing. And it's a one-click subscription, the easiest way to get involved. So just go ahead and click that subscribe button, and if you're on any other of the platforms out there and you're not using iTunes, you guys already know how to subscribe. If not, look on the website. We've got an easy and simple guide. So this is the one man from One Man Revolution, the Revolutionary, and see ya!